This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. My guest at this time is former U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, John Bolton, who's now with the American Enterprise Institute. And of course, we want to get his thoughts today on the ongoing unrest in Egypt, which also seems to be spreading to Jordan and some other countries in the region. And Mr. Ambassador, it's always great to have you with us.
Well, thank you very much. Glad to be with you.
It's good to have you with us, as always, especially at a time of major events like this. And when we look at what's happening in Egypt, the conventional wisdom seems to be that Mubarak's time is limited. Is there any sense that you have that what may replace him is going to be what we had, or is it ultimately going to be worse, whether it's al-Baradei, some combination with the Brotherhood, or anything else?
Well, I think the condition is highly uncertain, and anybody, myself included, who's making predictions is really doing so at their own hazard, because it's a very murky situation. I would have to say it's best to understand the regime as being the military in control, as it has been for almost 60 years. Mubarak, obviously, president, but the military control runs much deeper than simply his personal administration. And I think that what Mubarak probably expects is to try and hold out until his presidential term expires at the end of this year. And what the military would like would be to have another military figure succeed him. Whether that's possible or not, I don't know. But I do think it's clear the United States has real strategic interests at stake here, including most particularly the stability of the Egyptian-Israeli peace agreement. And I think that's in jeopardy. There's a lot of debate about what the level of influence of the Muslim Brotherhood is. I think the honest answer is we don't really know how influential the Brotherhood will be, but whatever influence it has, it's bad news.
What's the sense, as far as you can tell, of how the Egyptian people feel about the military? In other words, would the people in the streets accept someone, not necessarily all that close to Mubarak, but from the military, who's not necessarily going to be a great friend of some of the folks whose names are being floated out there now as successors?
Well, you know, that's an important question that we just don't know the answer to. I do think that there's great respect among the Egyptian population for the army as an institution, but whether that extends to continuing the army in power, we just don't know. You know, the people on the street came there spontaneously. I think everybody was caught by surprise. The Obama administration, the government of Egypt, many of the leaders of the opposition parties, everyone was caught by surprise. And while the uniform demand of the people seems to be that Mubarak has to go, once you get about a half an inch below that surface, it's not at all clear what the demonstrators want or what they would unite around, both their strengths and their weaknesses, that they have no real leadership. So that's one reason why I think this situation is so uncertain and the potential outcomes so much up in the air.
Does the U.S. have any specific leverage in this?
Well, I think the leverage we have is mostly over the military, because we supply so much of their advanced weapons capability. And I'm sure that's one reason that the military has said they're not going to fire on demonstrators on the million-man march in Cairo. That's one reason they've had a more restrained approach to the demonstrations than the Interior Ministry police and that sort of thing. So there is leverage, but in a sense, it's very limited, since the Muslim Brotherhood obviously is something that we have absolutely no leverage over at all. And that would be true even if the Muslim Brotherhood never actually takes power in Egypt, but if they're simply if they simply move to legitimate status, so that they can then use Egypt as a base of operations around the entire Middle East.
Sir, another thing that we're seeing today is unrest in Jordan, that the king there, King Abdullah, has let go his prime minister and the deputy prime minister. We're not seeing pictures out of Jordan, but what's your understanding of how dicey the situation is there?
Well, I think he's trying to get out in front of the curve, because he fully understands that if Egypt falls into a period of instability, it's going to affect every other government in the region. And I think that's something that that we need to consider before we just toss the regime in Egypt aside. We have to look at what that will say to every other autocratic regime, of which there are quite a few around the Middle East that have been friendly to the United States. If they don't think we're a reliable ally, they're going to turn and try and cut their own deals going forward, particularly the Arab states of the Persian Gulf region, I'm very much afraid, would be incentivized to negotiate separate agreements with Iran to increase Iran's influence in the region in the hopes that these governments at least think they could protect themselves. I think that would be very dangerous, but I can see that coming.
From the larger perspective, what can we do to prevent this slide of secular Arab states that the governments that currently sit there are about as good as we can hope for? We talked a little bit about Egypt and the leverage we have there. What can we do to prevent a domino effect from hitting Jordan and potentially Turkey and some other places?
Well, I think one thing we should not be doing is getting excessively involved in inside affairs in Egypt. You know, our record in trying to shepherd these transitions from authoritarian governments to democratic governments has been pretty bad in the past. And so there's a grave risk that we would go from having a friendly an authoritarian government friendly to the United States to an even more authoritarian government unfriendly to the United States. Jean Kirkpatrick analyzed this problem with devastating effect in her famous 1979 article, Dictatorships and Double Standards. It's definitely getting that article, worth getting that article out and reading it again today, because the inherent problems that she talked about are exactly what we're now facing.
We're talking with former U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, John Bolton. And, sir, I saw you over the weekend saying that for the most part you thought the president's statement at the end of last week was good. It should have been a lot shorter in your estimation. Anything else he should be doing at this point publicly in order to try and facilitate the best possible outcome, or just make sure that the U.S. looks as strong as possible in this environment?
Well, I would say as little as possible publicly. People are parsing every word our leaders are saying, sometimes giving them more meaning than the words themselves are intended to have. I think the bulk of the work ought to be done behind the scenes, where we do have the possibility of applying some leverage. But I think we've got to be very cautious here. This all came out of nowhere, and I think we're operating on very limited information. So with the stakes as high as they are, with information as limited as it is, that ought to counsel prudence both in our public statements and what we do behind the scenes.
What timetable, what are you looking for over the next coming weeks here to determine just the extent of this unrest throughout the region?
Well, I'm not sure, for example, in the case of Egypt, that this is going to play out very quickly. Some people seem to think it will, and I acknowledge that's a possible scenario. But nobody's given Mubarak the memo that it's time for him to leave. I still think he thinks he can play it out for the remainder of his term. So I don't necessarily look for a rapid resolution of all this. And that in and of itself is troubling, because the more instability there is, the greater the threat to the Suez Canal, the greater the risk of instability in oil prices that could negatively affect our economic recovery, and the greater the possibility of unrest in one of these regimes actually falling to a radical Islamist government.
Last question before we let you go, Mr. Ambassador. Obviously, a change in Egypt could mean a major change in Egypt's policy towards Israel. What do you expect the Netanyahu government to be considering as all of this unfolds?
Well, they've been very, very quiet in Israel, and I think that's understandable. I think they recognize that public statements at this point are not likely to be helpful, much more likely simply to make matters worse. But everybody I've talked to in the Israeli government, or just Israel generally, is extremely concerned at the state of play, extremely worried that the Egyptian-Israeli peace agreement dating back to 1979 may come apart. And with that, all of the structures of peace and security that Israel has counted on for so long. So I think Israel is feeling really threatened by developments in Egypt, in Jordan, in Lebanon, all around the region.
A lot of moving parts. Mr. Ambassador, thank you so much for your time and your analysis today.
Well, thank you again for having me.
Appreciate it. Former U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, John Bolton, now at the American Enterprise Institute. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.